You're listening to the USCA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USCA eventing news. Welcome to the USCA official podcast, episode 276. And with the season getting into full swing, listeners, we said that we would have a fitness special for you. And I have wrangled two of the best in the business to the show to give you some top advice. And I will start by welcoming Irish international event rider Sam Watson.
What an introduction, Nicole. Thank you very much. I hope I've not disappointed listeners now when you said best in the business and then you follow that up with Sam Watson. But there we go. Thank you.
Hey, you won a team silver at the World
US soil. I wanted everyone to know when I was there, I was dancing on tables and on a bar with my teammates. It wasn't just me. we made the most of it, and I haven't stopped talking about it since. So yeah, it's good.
No, well, that's okay. And you are joined by one of the best vets in the world. He often helps with the US team when they come over to European soil. Welcome to the show, Tim Randall, your first ever podcast, Tim.
Indeed, yes. Thank you very much, Nicole. My first ever podcast, and no pressure with the introduction, but thank you. Yeah.
And we are all actually recording this either in the UK or Ireland, and it is very cold, very snowy, very wet. And so we are going to be sitting back thinking we are in Florida, sunny Florida, listeners, throughout this show to try and get us in the mood. Start of the season, though, fitness is a key topic. People talk about it quite a lot. It's one of those things that's really key to the success of a season. But I guess where we start, Sam, is how does everybody get to this start of the year? And maybe their horse has had a little bit of a break, maybe they've been ticking over, but where do you start in kind of going, right, okay, eventing season's kicking off, I want to start entering some events? How do they know, one, what sort of fitness level their horse is at currently, and how they are going to make a plan to get to where they want to get to?
Yeah, it's a good question, Nicole. And I think when I think about fitness, it covers more than just ensuring that my horse is capable of performing for the last 2 minutes of a cross-country course. It's a very important bedrock from which any athlete can perform. So it's also about injury prevention. We use the word conditioning quite a lot. So you're trying to condition the body to the work that it's going to do. So we'll talk about sort of event specific or sort of task specific fitting as well, and conditioning them to what they're going to do. So that will start to bring in the jumping side of things. And it's just the all round athleticism of a horse as well. So even when we all get in shape, just from we start going running ourselves as humans, we find that like that would actually improve our performance. If we were golfers have gone through it, golfers didn't need to really be fit, but they now all condition themselves and have a bit more personal fitness. They don't all kind of carry their bellies around 18 holes of golf as much as they used to. You know, they're trying to be in better shape because it helps them to perform better as athletes as well. So where do you start? For me, I start with an aerobic base, which is low intensity, and building up a strong kind of foundation and base of work. So I like to keep on the 2 days a week. So sort of every third day, there's a reason for that. And that's kind of assuming that they have a day off as well. So 7 days in a week. The reason for working on every third day is this concept of supercompensation, which is quite important, I think, for people to know about, whether humans or horses, is that after you stress the body, which is an important thing to do, to the right level, not overstress it, but not understress it either. You've got to work a horse's muscles or heart or lungs or whatever you're going to work. They need to recover a little bit. And then there will be this window after a little bit of recovery where they now have the capacity to do more than whatever you just did with them 3 days ago. And that tends to be in a kind of a 3 to 5 day window. You might find with some horses that you have to break the weekly cycle and it suits them much better. They need a longer recovery time. You might only work them every fourth or fifth day harder. So, you know, some horses will be different, but most horses can cope with every third day being asked for their kind of bigger fitting day effort. And that's how I kind of operate. So I have this bigger day, couple of recovery days in which I'm doing some of my flat work, some of my jumping work, because that all counts as it's active recovery. And then the fitness day. And at this time of year, Nicole, it's about building the mileage up at a slower pace. I would, for people who like numbers, 400 meters per minute is what I aim for. So 4 minute miles. And that's only a little bit more than show jumping. Show jumping pace is about 350 meters per minute. So it's just, you're just lolloping along at that pace. And I'm just slowly building up the time I spend at that pace, because that's going to become my big base for later in the season when I want to up the intensity.
Yeah. And I suppose it's like a pyramid, isn't it? So if that base is nice and broad, then you've got plenty of space to kind of build upon it. Tim, from your perspective, obviously fitness is vital in terms of a longevity of a horse's career, keeping them fit, sound, healthy, and actually preventing those injuries that come up. Before anybody starts their sort of faster work as such, say they've just been doing a little bit of trail riding, a few happy hacks over the last few months, and they want to sort of start stepping that workload up, how much would you recommend before they actually start to pick up the pace a bit?
Yeah, well, I think it's Sam's covered some really key points with his comments, and I think working backwards from a target is a tried and tested and key concept, because fitness is something which you aim to build to a peak, and it's actually quite difficult to hold peak fitness for extended periods. So it's important to try and decide what your target's going to be and then to work backwards from it, so you don't go too soon with your intensity build up of work. And probably for most horses, 6 to 8 weeks of increasing cardiovascular load is going to be the right sort of time frame to get them to where they need to be to participate in their competition. I mean, Sam's comments about resting between exercises is again really important. That there's a danger sometimes to become too fixated with the concept of working the horse harder and harder because you've got a target, and perhaps you may have had some interruptions because, as we are in the UK at the moment, weather is interfering with people's plans to progress the horse's work, or maybe it's the horses hitting health problems or hiccups in their own ability to train that might temporarily derail the plan. But it's important to just to make sure that you allow them to recover from workouts as well as to train them hard when you do train them, so that you don't inadvertently then create problems with their soundness perhaps.
Would you build a little bit of leeway into that sort of program? So say, for example, listeners are sort of thinking, right, okay, I want to have a couple of events back. I'm going to just take it steady. But actually by my third or fourth run, I really want to be able to step on the gas on the cross country and kind of start to be really competitive before maybe even looking to step up a level. Would you build a little bit of a contingency plan in there, Tim, to allow for those bits that might not quite go to plan?
I guess the contingency, yes, but it's important to be aware with once people, horses are fit, then actually it might take a while to get them fit, but they tend to hold their fitness really surprisingly well. So unless you have a major, major interruption, the horse literally has to stand still for a couple of weeks. Even if you have to back off a little bit and you spend a couple of weeks predominantly walking, or walking and trotting and missing your canter work workouts, then they can still hold their fitness level surprisingly well. So I think it's just worth remembering that all is not lost. If you do have a bit of a hiccup, then the horses will often pick up and carry on from where they left off surprisingly well.
Yeah, and I guess at the end of the day, if you have to make a plan B, a plan C with horses, then they like to throw that into the mix as well. Sam, from obviously people competing at all different levels, whether it be through beginner novice all the way up through to advanced international level, this is something that everybody can apply, isn't it? So no matter what level they're competing at, no matter what sort of level of fitness they need to get their horse to, a variation of this is very applicable.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does affect you. I think people sometimes feel, even towards the end of a show jumping round, that you can find a horse starting to get a little bit tired, maybe flattening their jump a little bit and getting, you know, having a rail is more susceptible, or starting to get heavier in the contact and just becoming, you know, harder work to ride, or getting faster and the stride is getting a lot longer. And because they're a little bit tired, they're not able to sit on their back legs and put the balance back on their back legs and sort of, and keep everything feeling nice and the way you want it to feel, even in a show jumping round. That's over 70 seconds. So the same definitely applies cross country, you know, like that last minute can, you don't want that feeling hard work, and you don't want that horse going down onto its forehand as well and starting to risk injury and things like that as well, being fatigued. So it is important at every level that you're conditioning the horse for what it's for. They're not all Rolls-Royce, Ferrari athletes. So you've got, like for me, a 5K run is a day off for a proper runner. A 5K run for me is very much a day on, you know, so we're all different. We're not all top athletes. So we've got to condition ourselves for our level. And I think in terms of, you know, making a start today, I think rule number one is do not surprise the body. Don't surprise a horse's body with workload and things like that. And like small incremental building it up is absolutely the key. So that's why you'll hear a lot of people in the horse world talk about patience and, you know, having a system and having a routine, that you do get into that habit of that, you know, stepping up the work a little bit, having some nice active recovery, stepping it up again a little bit more the next week. But it is all about those incremental steps, not rushing it. Like I would factor in sort of, I go for about 12 weeks before, if I was looking at badminton, I would start upping my higher intensity work. So 12 weeks before badminton is about the second week of February. And that is when I will start to go away from my 400 meters per minute, or away from my low intensity base building stuff, which is all quite enjoyable. That's basically just jogging. So it goes away from that. And because I can, because my horses are doing 25 minutes of that, all quite relaxed. They're a pretty fit athlete in one way, you know, like their body is working efficiently, you know, they're coping with a workload. So lots of positive things are happening, but I'm not really stressing things to any extreme level, and I'm not stressing them mentally either. You know, like they're actually starting to enjoy exercise and relax in their exercise. That's important as well. If you have a horse that is a puller, and the minute you go near a gallops, its heart rate is going up anyway, and all it wants to do is bolt, they need to get used to that lower intensity stuff so that they realize that actually exercise can be relaxed. And then I just start to step up that pace a little bit at a time. And that's when I start to bring my mileage back as well. So that starts to come back. And that's where you start going more towards the traditional interval training, where you might only be working a horse for a mile at a time. But the intensity of that mile and the speed of that mile, and if you're working on a hill, you know, that's going to contribute to the intensity. And that's where you want to start, not just clocking your times and your speed, but also that's where you want to get a heart rate monitor on your horse. So make sure that you're doing enough and you're not doing too much. And you want to record it. You want to measure it. That's the only way that we can talk about incremental steps and not surprising the body. The only way that you can build a training system for your horse is to actually record it. And then when you start to miss things, and the reason I factor in 12 weeks is I want the horse peaking about 2 weeks before. And I want to have 2 weeks up my sleeve for a shoe that got pulled off or something that happened. You know, it inevitably does that. I know that I've got eight kind of progressive weeks of really stepping it up to have that horse absolutely tip top. And that will include competitions. I'll be competing along the way there as well after the first kind of 3 to 4 weeks, probably within that cycle. I'll start bringing in competitions, but peak fitness will be achieved around that 10-week window, and then I can start to have them, you know, call it tapering, just backing off a little bit, so that they're not worn out from the whole getting fit process, and they hold their fitness, as Tim says. So for the long journeys that we have, and again, that's probably a big factor in the US, and the overseas travel and things like that, that all happens weeks out from your big competition.
Yeah, that actually is a really good point. And I'll come on to something you mentioned there in a moment. But you were talking a little bit about heart rate monitors and that kind of thing. And we'll speak about the different sort of fitness options that people have available to them these days. There's lots of different options available. But even recording visually, I guess, Tim, knowing your horse and kind of going, okay, well, today I have done X, Y, and Z, and my horse, knowing my horse recovered reasonably quickly, wasn't breathing heavily, was quite happy to pick up and go again in however many minutes, just wear a watch and writing that down is a really, really simple way of everybody being able to kind of get a measure of how well their horses are recovering.
Yeah, I was going to jump in there, Nicole, and so it's probably no surprise really to hear Sam talking about heart rate monitors and data, being a data man, and I that really chimes with me. I think the not that heart rate monitors are new technology by any means, but the technology is progressing so rapidly now that it's really easy to have a heart rate monitor on an app that connects with your phone. It's not difficult to set it up on your horse, and actually to be able to, as you say, chart, record, even subjective observations like how quickly did my horse seem to stop sweating or did he get his breath back after that workout is really useful for monitoring and comparison and charting his progress and perhaps picking up on problems even before they've become overtly problems. There's some good work with simple monitoring of heart rates in exercising horses and the link that can have as a predictor of injury. So if you get into the habit of recording these things and then suddenly something isn't quite as you expect it to be, or as it has been, it can give you a very early insight into what might be going on. And these objective ways of looking at horses, although we don't want to lose sight of the art of training horses and the art of vetting them, then being able to measure how they move, being able to record their soundness in an objective way, being able to, there was an interesting presentation at the FEI safety and risk seminar yesterday about the measuring of horses striding and stride patterns into a show jump and perhaps linking their performance with this sort of data that you can generate relatively simply nowadays. So it's a really interesting area, that.
Is it something that's becoming more available as well? Because it certainly, you know, professional riders like yourself, Sam, have perhaps been using it for a few years, but actually now, as Tim said, there's a lot of research around that kind of guides people who are less experienced into how they can apply that and access that.
Yeah, exactly. It's all far more accessible. And then working out how to use it and how to help it fit your system, I think is important as well. It the thing about a heart rate monitor is that the heart can tell you about stress as well, you know, stress on how hard is a horse having to work to give you that effort. So if you're doing a piece of work that you know should be well within the horse's comfort zone because, you know, that's the level of work he's been doing, and yet you feel this horse finding it quite hard and you've got some evidence to back it up that you're not just imagining it, because unfortunately humans, we're like that, we're a bit insecure. then it is time to sort of go, oh, he's really struggling with his work today. And is it just an outlier thing, or is there is it a small thing that they're going to recover from just going easy on that day of work, calling it quits a little bit early and saying, right, this isn't a session to go that 5% more than what I did last week. This is a session to actually just back off and actually cut out a little bit early because they're struggling. And you do have to do that. I remember in 2018 with Arda Highlight making that call that it was literally, I think it was 3 weeks before the competition, and it would have been one of my biggest workload. I think it was going to be my last workout at home before we went to a training camp in the UK and before we'd eventually go over to the US and quarantine and do all that. So, you know, I had this day penned as probably the most important canter of the entire autumn season. And And I thought, he's just not going with the same enthusiasm. And I didn't want to push him. And I had to be, the brave thing was to not push him, was to just do a workout. And I thought, look, it's better to have a horse underneath me than to try and tick all my boxes in terms of, yeah, I did this speed for this duration over this distance or whatever it was. And, you know, again, feeling that I had done enough and that he would be fit enough and all the rest, to get there without having to push the boat out this far. And I'm glad I did that, because he was fit enough on the day, and we didn't go over the line. So it's all that balance. But again, you can be, the more information that you have available to you, the better. And I think for most people, they're actually trying to, the modern sport is actually about, and particularly at grassroots, it's about trying to maximize the length of your season. You know, you don't really want to be giving your horse 3 months off at any time. I mean, no one really wants to be doing that. But even that kind of six weeks off in a year is a very small period. If you want to be competing your horse for 9 months of a season, that's an awful long time. Like, you just simply can't have your horse at peak fitness. So you've got to start looking at a little bit of periodization. And then if it's not really stressing their body to an extreme, you still want to make sure that they're conditioned for what they're doing, and you're building up to that, and you're still getting in some little rests as well and some little periods. And again, having the discipline of the heart rate monitors, being able to look back over your year and go, yeah, look, there was a month when we let him down a little bit and he just wasn't working quite so hard. It just keeps them sweet, keeps them enjoying their job. And it just stops the body getting overtrained as well and having to do too much.
With respect to that then, Sam, do you think it is a good thing for them to have for a horse to have a proper holiday during each year? Because I think one of the problems, not so much in the UK because of our climate, but if you travel across Europe, or if you're based in the States and you have the possibilities of northern and some southern events, the season can really stretch out to become sort of almost year round, perhaps not quite. And there may be a temptation not to give them that little bit of time each 12 month cycle to properly recuperate and recover and repair any sort of subclinical issues that might have accumulated during the season.
Yeah. What I find with the younger horses is that the whole process, so that the 5, 6 and 7 year olds, I find that their body's been taken to a new place. You know, it's there's been a kind of significant amount of work compared to what they were used to before they started that season. And I like them. I actually like them to have 6 weeks off and that's letting them down for a couple of weeks after their last event. So you're not just taking a really fit horse and suddenly doing no work with them, that you're just easing them down for 2 weeks and sort of preparing them for nothing. You know, the diet starts to change a little bit through that, so you're starting to reduce their hard feed and stuff like that. And I love to see them in a herd for 6 weeks, mentally as much as physically, but their bodies had quite a lot of change to adapt to. And then it's a slow, you know, then you're talking about 6 weeks of, you've got to really start at the beginning again, and that low level work. So like, that's like at least a 12 week period where you're definitely not competing. And, you know, for me, I'm not even doing things like cross country schooling and stuff like that. It's just either complete break or low level building back up. Then the older horses, maybe not so long, because their bodies haven't changed that much. It's just about bringing them some sort of peak fitness in and out of that peak fitness. But I still think it's really important for them mentally and physically to just have that break from the high intensity stuff. So they might only have 3 weeks or 4 weeks without being ridden, and that might be their complete off season. It's a shorter window. And then we're doing more things with them, like the flat work, because it's good for them and all that sort of stuff. Just general, like Pilates and that sort of stuff. It's not necessarily looking for high performance, but just managing the body. But I think it's important for them to have I still take them through a 2 month buildup. I try and treat them as though they've been off for 2 months, and just build them back up slowly. Cause I just think it's nice for them mentally to not have to be doing high level work all year round.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree the difference between older and younger horses and how they benefit or potentially don't benefit quite so much from having big disruptions to their training and the younger ones. Certainly, it's great to give them a proper recovery period when, as you say, they're adapting and their bodies are experiencing so many new pressures in those first two or three seasons.
I suppose that as well comes down to when you are in the middle of a season, say it's a long season and you've got a few real key targets. Actually, there's no reason why you can't sort of build into your program of what you're looking to achieve a couple of quieter weeks, that if you've built that base fitness, Tim, that you can kind of back off and let them have a lighter couple of weeks, a bit more hacking, less fast work, and then just sort of let them go a little bit, but pick them back up. They're not going back out in the field. You said earlier as well that, you know, they do keep that fitness pretty well, but it's just letting them switch off a little bit from what they're perhaps used to.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest injury problems that we see isn't a single one-off explosive problem. I mean, those things can happen. Horses can step into holes or bump into things. But the biggest group of injuries that we all deal with, I think, on a more regular basis are repetitive strain injuries, cumulative damage that occurs from repeating, not necessarily heroic manoeuvres, but the same thing lots and lots of times. So the idea of cross-training them and giving them periods of time when they're working, but they're working in a different way, perhaps using different terrains, using hills when we haven't been using hills, or using, and you mentioned previously, Nicole, things like treadmills and water treadmills and alternative swimming, alternative ways of giving them a bit of a workout without necessarily repeating the same question, can be really useful.
Let's talk about those sort of alternative fitness options, because swimming, just a normal treadmill, a water treadmill, Sam, has sort of become fairly popular among some top horses. I know do it a lot over the last few years, and that's perhaps become more public knowledge. But is it something that you personally believe in, or do you prefer to be on board and kind of get that feeling yourself?
I think that my preference is to be able to do something that is quite close, you know, resembles what they're going to be asked to do in competition. So the big difference between a racehorse and an event horse is that a racehorse can, you know, it is all just about galloping at speed and sustaining it for as long as they can. And for a racehorse to gallop, you know, consistently at one pace reflects what they do in a race, really. An event horse speeds up and slows down and goes uphill and goes downhill. And so what they would call in running is sort of fartlek training, where they're doing bursts of faster work and then kind of slowing down a little bit and then doing another burst of faster work and stuff. That gives you an idea into the kind of the mental, there's a mental side to that as well for a horse. There's mental fitness as well as the physical fitness and conditioning that the horse's body. Like if you've done all your work, all your fitness work on a beautiful surface up a hill, which, you know, reduces the impact. Now that is the best way to reduce injury. And that load that Tim is talking about of, you know, I would not suggesting that you go galloping your horse downhill on rock hard ground during the summer to get him fit, because he might have to do that in a competition. But having them conditioned. So I would sometimes do, again, taking the speed right down, but doing some grass work even during the summer on good grass, on well-maintained ground and everything, just means that the body is conditioned. I don't want to stress it too much on that. I don't want to promote an injury, but I do want to, again, back to that rule of no surprises, I don't want running around Barbary in July on the side of a hill in summer to be a huge shock to the horse's system. So that's where the swimming and the treadmills come in, that they can get you out of a hole, like particularly if your horse is sort of pulled off a shoe and is a bit sore or has a foot abscess or something and just doesn't want to put weight on that leg. And swimming just is a nice form of exercise to keep the body ticking over, and some nice variety as well. I think it really works nicely into the system. I would be, until I go more into that, and I'm kind of intuitively against ever thinking that I can substitute my big workout day with something like that. I actually like the water treadmills as part of more as part of the active recovery portfolio rather than the getting fit side of it. Probably works for a bit of base fitness and kind of some of the lower aerobic work that I was talking about. But in terms of actual hard anaerobic high intensity work, I'm going to save. I would prefer to be on their back for that.
Kim, what's your take on that? That all makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And everybody's delighted that they haven't got to build a horse vehicle.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I would concur with Sam that it's the relevancy of the work is important. I think the difficulty with swimming is that you can give a horse a great cardiovascular workout in the pool, but I think you have, as Sam was saying earlier, you've got to be building unfamiliar exercise into the horse's routine in very small steps. It's you've got to be careful if you do lose a shoe or you have some sort of training issue that prevents you suddenly from being able to pursue plan A. You've got to be careful that you don't leap into the pool with too much enthusiasm and something which is unfamiliar to the horse's body could be quite problematic. So probably those sort of facilities for those who are lucky enough to have them come into their own when you can be able to use them in small amounts regularly rather than feeling pressurized to use it because you've traveled 20 miles to get to the venue, to the facility to take your horse for a swim and using them regularly as part of a management routine, perhaps for a horse that for whatever reason doesn't cope so well with the galloping or the under saddle work because of its back or its limbs or whatever, then they can be useful. But they are quite different in terms of the parts of the body that they're going to pressurize to ridden work. And so you do have to just bear in mind their relevance to the training for the task in hand.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so we've got our fitness program. I suppose the important message here is not only, you know, if you're not sure about where to start, talk to your trainer, talk to your vet. If something doesn't feel right while you're doing it, if you feel like your recording has sort of thrown up something that seems a little bit out of character, talk to somebody and kind of get their take on it so that you're nipping any problems in the bud early. But in terms of any other sort of good habits, Tim, you're sort of upping your fitness work at the start of a season. What should people really be thinking? Oh, I also, yes, I'm going to get my horse fit, but I also need to think about this as well.
I think in a lot of species and humans, particularly, there's debate for individuals about whether the cardiovascular system or the respiratory system is going to be the limiting factor. Inevitably, there will be some system in the body which limits how fast an individual can go. And with horses, there's usually no debate that the respiratory system is the limiting factor. Horses they're built to have a tremendous capacity for increasing their cardiovascular performance when they're under pressure and exercising. And it's, if anything, will place a limit on how far and how fast they can go, it will be their ability to get oxygen into their bloodstream and deliver it. So making sure that their respiratory health is good and things like keeping their environment dust free and their forage good and their paying attention to any little coughs and discharges that they may get from their nose is actually can seem quite trivial, but it's quite important as part of the preparation for the build-up of their fitness campaign. And I think the other thing that Sam again touched on, and as a professional he wouldn't be so relevant to him, but for a lot of riders their own fitness is really important. I think when you stand beside a track and watch horses going round, particularly at maybe at lower level events, you're conscious that it's not always the horses that are fatiguing, it's often the riders, and you know, you can do a lot to help your horse from on top if you're in good shape at the end of the course to help hold them together a bit and guide them through the finish.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And especially you're talking about the horse, you don't want them to be lacking concentration in the latter part of a cross-country round or the last line of show jumps. And actually that goes to the rider as well. You want to be feeling totally on top of your game and being able to support each other as best as you possibly can. I guess the other thing is important to note is check your vaccinations, because if you're going to all of a sudden the week before your big event realize that actually your horse needs a vaccine, you've probably left it to a inappropriate time. So check early, plan it in advance so that you can make sure that you're not going to have any nasty surprises throughout the season. the best way to aid recovery. So just very quickly on this, because I think it's probably a show in itself, but you've done a really hard piece of fitness work, or you have been to a competition, Tim, what are your go-tos in terms of making sure that you're giving your horse the best possible chance of as quick and as easy recovery from that hard piece of work?
Yeah, I think happily nowadays, most of us are very, very tuned into the sort of immediate recovery of a horse after exertion, getting his temperature back down, getting his heart rate and breathing rate recovered as quickly as possible, and helping them to do that by cooling them, actively cooling them with cold water. And once you've got them through that immediate recovery phase, then water again is a key ingredient, because of course rehydrating them is vital. And horses are like humans, like they'll lose a lot of electrolytes through their sweat. They need to have the electrolytes, the salt, replaced in order to be able to then hold the water within their bodies to reinflate them, reinflate their bloodstream and rehydrate them. And horses are not very good at storing electrolytes, so you can't preload them with electrolytes to any meaningful degree. And it all boils down to replacing the losses as quickly as you can once they've occurred. So cooling them off quickly, getting their electrolytes restored by giving them some electrolyte supplementation, and then giving them access to water so that they drink and rehydrate themselves would be two key principles.
And I think as well on that, if you're doing this after your fast work and your training, it's actually part of your training as well, because it gets you very much in that mindset, gets the horse very used to what you're going to then do to them after a competition. And it just becomes part of your routine and a really good habit to get into. And I suppose, Sam, good habits around fitness are really key. We've mentioned a few of them on here, but if you could get one message across to anybody listening, regardless of the level, what would it be?
I would stick to that. No surprises or progressive loading is probably the more positive way of doing that. Look at where you are. So for somebody who wants to get started and build their fitness program, look at what you did last week. And you know, as long as that's kind of reflective of what you've been doing for the period before, it wasn't an outlier week. Use that as your base. And whether it is mileage or speed or intensity, if you've got heart rate monitors and things like that, just small gains and small consistent gains, so that your horse's body is getting conditioned to that. So that even the fittest horses are the ones that recover best as well. So you shouldn't, and it's a performance issue. There's a risk in issue with, particularly with eventing. You know, we don't want to see horses finishing the course exhausted, because it's there's a danger aspect to it as well as an injury risk aspect to the horse and to the rider. So, you know, get them ready, but just that progressive loading to get to that point. And then nothing should ever feel like a big dramatic shock to that horse.
Big surprise. How small is small? I mean, are we talking 10 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute?
When you're in the base building phase, like I'm in now, like my horses, because I'm not increasing speed yet, I'm staying at this lower level speed. I'm increasing. They started off doing, because they'd have been in the school doing their, you know, with a bit of lunging, then a bit of flat work and stuff. So 5 minutes of hat cantering off their back at 400 meters per minute, one way, and then the other way, they were ready for that, because they're all their flat work and their hacking and everything like that had sort of prepared them for that. And then I increased that by a minute. I'll go 6 minutes one way and then five the next way in my next workout, which means I'm increasing it by 2 minutes a week at 400 meters per minute. 2 minutes a week is 800 meters, which is half a mile. So I'm increasing the distance that I'm covering by half a mile a week in that kind of 8 week base building pyramid or period, which means I'm going from about day one, 2 miles of real easy cantering, to at the end of that period, they're actually able to do 6 miles of easy. I mean, the stress here, the importance here, people will hear 6 miles of work. Like a lot of racehorse trainers would think you're crazy. But if it's low intensity, horse enjoying it, finds it easy. And we would do, that's only 24 minutes of canter. You know, you do that in a dressage lesson, you'd be cantering for 24 minutes and you're not going that much faster. So that gives you an idea of that side of things. And then with the speed, that's where you just got to go again. You got to be really careful of actually giving people formulas and stuff like that, because every horse reacts differently. The big caveat with what I've just said is if your horse is kind of struggling, stay at that point until they find it easy. You'll notice the thing you will really enjoy about this is not only is it kind of 2 days a week where you really have a plan of what you're going to do and you know it's going to benefit your horse, and it's 2 days where you're not going, what will I do with the horse today? It's 2 days where you have a plan, you'll enjoy that side of it. And what you will love is feeling your horse improve week on week. And that's a cool thing to get into, because I know what it feels like to go round and round in circles for about 5 years with a horse, feeling like I've never really improved anything to do with its performance at any point. That's because I never had a system and a plan. So this fitness side, it's really cool to feel them improving. If they're not, if you're getting to a point where they're kind of struggling, just hold that pattern, or even sometimes back off until they start to feel comfortable enough. And then maybe just the last bit is just a little bit more effort, but it's kind of manageable effort. And the same with the speed. You've just got to go up. What would I be doing? About 20 meters per minute faster a week. So, you know, after, and again, on different horses for different targets, it's going to go up a little bit more than that. But my top horses need to be getting up eventually to around 700 meters per minute. Cause even though they're only competing at 570, they'll be doing coffin fences and, you know, lots of technical fences. So they will need to be going quite quick in, you know, at some of the galloping stretches in between fences. So I am having to get them to be able to produce those faster speeds. So again, I've got to incrementally build that. But do use your feel at all times, read your horse, but then have your plan and your kind of your data side of it alongside supporting you to help make those better decisions as well.
Yeah, slow and steady wins the race. Tim, how about you? Key message from you.
Well, I think that's a really important point. The tip from a veterinary point of view, the two risk factors that are age old, nothing new about it, for injury would be speed and hard ground. So if you're running quickly, too fast, or you're running on ground which is too hard, which obviously in racing terms tends to encourage the horses to go a bit quicker, then you're far more likely to get injuries. So slow and steady wins the race to a certain extent, and that's where this interval training principle allows you to work within the aerobic training zone for most of the time, and use your short sprint type work, your anaerobic type exercise more sparingly, just to put the icing on the cake, as it were, from a fitness point of view. And event horses are—they're not sprinters. They have to—they are the sort of decathletes, heptathletes of the athletic world. So they have to be able to show a turn of speed from time to time. But as Sam says, a lot of their training is skilled and task specific, and their ability to be fit and to gallop over a distance is only part of the whole range of skills and physical skills that they have to master in training.
Yeah, absolutely. Tim, Sam, thank you. I honestly could pick both of your brains on this for many, many hours, because there is so much to cover. But listeners, we hope that we've given you a little bit of an insight into fitness and the things that you can do to apply to your own situations. Always make sure that you talk to your vet, talk to your trainer, ask people's opinion, ask for help if you're not sure, and slow and steady will win the race. But thank you both very much. Tim, I hope you liked your first podcast experience.
Oh, Nicole, it was an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much indeed for inviting me. Thank you.
Thank you for having us. Absolutely. Sam, thank you very much. And listeners, thank you. We will be back very shortly. In fact, a little birdie tells me that the next episode might just be a Valentine's special. So stay tuned for that. But that is all we've got time for. A big thank you to Tim Randall and Sam Watson. And listeners, we'll be back very shortly. Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.